Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Dan Hurley. Jennifer Palmieri, the communications director for the Hillary Clinton campaign, writes in her new book, Madam President, that, quote, the campaign set out to prove that it didn't matter that Hillary Clinton was a woman. And we did. We showed that this woman could do the job of president as it had been done by every man before her, reducing her to a female facsimile of the qualities we expect to see in a male president. But I now see, she writes, that path robbed Hillary of something valuable, some measure of her own humanity, some of the qualities that were unique to her. We are joined today by Jennifer Palmieri, who, in addition to her role with the 2016 Clinton campaign, has worked as the communications director for the Obama White House and as the national press secretary for the 2004 John Edwards campaign. Currently, she serves as the president of the Center for American Progress Action Fund. To join our discussion, call 513-419-7100 or email us at talk@wvxu.org. We're on Facebook and Twitter as well. Jennifer, welcome to Cincinnati.
Thank you. I'm really happy to be here.
You're going to be at the Mercantile Library tonight.
Yes.
And I've been told that there's still room, so I want to make sure everybody feels invited.
Yes.
The book will be on sale, and you'll be signing them. So
yes.
That starts at
yes.
6 o'clock with yep. your presentation actually starting at 6:30.
Yes.
So, all right. You know, the United States likes to think that we're progressive. We're on the leading edge of
right.
change.
Yeah.
But other countries, Great Britain, mm-hmm. Margaret Thatcher, Theresa May right now,
right.
Germany, Angela Merkel, India, Indira Gandhi, Israel, Golda Meir,
mm-hmm.
the Philippines, Corazon Aquino, and many, many other countries have had women.
Yes.
Why do American women politicians who aspire to the presidency have to run, as you say, with half their humanity tied behind their back?
Well, I hope for the next woman who runs, it will be different. And that's part of the reason why I wrote the book, was because I wanted to examine what happened with Hillary and with the expectation that that's going to, you know, that would help change it for the next woman. I think that we just, you know, what we did not have, I didn't appreciate going into it what a big deal it was to elect the first woman. I had felt certainly in my own career that I'd always been supported by men and women both and done really well. And I thought it was just sort of a matter of time before we had the first woman president. But historically speaking, it's a radical thing for a woman to be in charge. And women have only had the right to vote in America for less than 100 years. It's, you know, it's just 100 years we've been participating in politics and the workplace. And so it's still kind of a new thing. And I didn't appreciate how important it is to have a model that people can look at. And there just isn't a model for a woman at the national level in America.
But why isn't there a model in the United States?
So I think part of the problem is that a lot of the countries that you mentioned have parliamentary systems. Right? So that means that the party leader is selected from a relatively small group, usually in the hundreds. That's an easier situation for women. You can work your colleagues one-on-one. They get to know you as a person. And then you come before, you know, like if in the United Kingdom, for example, they talk about electing a government, right? They talk about in terms of we. It's not as focused on the person. You know, also, you don't go through the national primary process that you do in America, which I think puts an extra hurdle for women. There's also something interesting about the United Kingdom, I think, in particular, in that in their history, they've had three very important queens, right? The current queen, Queen Victoria, and the first Queen Elizabeth. And obviously the queens were not selected by the people, but by the subjects, as it were. But I think that the British public has, a lot of reverence for these women that ruled their country. And models are really important. And that's what we struggled with Hillary, which, you know, we had to prove that she could do the job. That's what you do in a job interview. You got to prove it. I can do the job just the way it's been done before. And that, but that did, by definition, rob her of some of her own qualities. I think that's why people thought she was inauthentic. That's why you hear things like, there's something about her I just don't like. It just didn't quite add up to us. And I think that's also wrapped up with some obstacles we still have to overcome about how we look at women with ambition as well.
Well, and that on that point, you write about the reaction to the concession speech that she made the day after the election. She had lost. She made a very moving speech,
yeah,
which a lot of people reacted by saying, why didn't we see this side of Hillary Clinton during the campaign? You have a very different reaction to that speech.
Yeah. So I heard this from her friends even, you know, where was this Hillary when it mattered? She was so gracious. She was so selfless. It was so appealing. And I thought, yes, because that's what people think is acceptable for a woman to do. Be a gracious loser, concede, be selfless. And that's just not, and those, you know, and those are true attributes of Hillary, but you can't really see them when you're running for president. Because when you're running for president, you have to do this. You have to say, in effect, I want the most powerful job on the planet. I believe I am the best person for the most powerful job on the planet, and here are all the reasons why I would be great at the job, and the guy I'm running against would be terrible. You know, that's not a very appealing, even to my ears as I'm saying it right now. And that's what the job of a candidate is. And it's, you know, it's outrageous ambition. It's audacious ambition. I want that big job. And, you know, I think it's an interesting thing when we did research about how people felt about her wanting this job as president during the campaign. And what we found was the attribute people liked the best about her was that she had been Obama's Secretary of State, that she had been willing to go work for the man who had defeated her in the 2008 presidential campaign. And that really surprised me because, you know, I thought, first of all, it's a privilege to be Secretary of State. I thought it was gracious of Obama to give her the job. But I think, you know, what told me was that a lot of people looked at her as purely about ambition, right? And that it said a lot that she was able to put that, you know, overriding ambition that she had aside to work for him. So I think that we still struggle with this. You know, we think women are either all ambition or none. And can't, you know, still struggle to see that a woman can be ambitious as well as compassionate and nurturing and wanting to be president because you wanted to do good for the country.
Well, you know, there's a lot of questions about the place of women in corporate America particularly, not
right,
just in business in general, but corporate America particularly. Uh-huh. Do you think women in corporate America have found this balance, or have they become facsimiles of male?
I think it's changing, but I think they've become facsimiles of men too. I mean, when I feel that in my own life, you know, in the Obama White House where I felt very supported, I would have sometimes some of my female colleagues would complain about, you know, how it's still a man's world. And I would bristle at that because I would think, no, I'm doing great in this. You know, I don't feel like that way at all. But the way I look at it now is I was doing great in a man's world, but I was doing great because I, you know, hit certain marks. I, you know, stayed later than everybody else. I was, you know, 100% sure before I opened my mouth that what I said was right. And I think, you know, I talk to a lot of women of the baby boomer generation, and I think, you know, for women who are at the high ranks of, you know, corporations now, maybe from that generation still, and they broke glass ceilings across the board in all these professions. They had to prove that they could do the job just the same as a man. And what I think about that, you know, I have a friend who said I had to dress like a girl, think like a man, and work like a dog to, you know, to succeed in a man's world. And the way I look at it now is I think, sure, I could do the job just the same as a man and just as well as a man, but I don't want to. I want to do the job the way I want to do it. And it made me realize when I had a moment of epiphany sitting on a tarmac in Florida in October of 2016, where I had that thought that you opened with about how what we had done to Hillary was sort of reduce her to this facsimile of a man, and thought, how could I be so stupid? How could I have such a limited sense of how you portray a leader in America? And that's a fundamental flaw in the design. You'd have to go all the way back to square one to fix it. And I didn't have a thought sitting there what that would look like because there was no model. And but something changed after the election. I think women, that was why I wanted to write the book, was that if you didn't support Trump, you had to look at the results and think either he was meant to win, and that's who's meant to win in America, or wow, this confirms for me those doubts I've had in my back of my head are right. We are playing by an outdated and wrong set of rules, and women are going to engage in the world differently. And that's what you see happening just in so many venues, politics, arts, business, you know, community, people, women are just, are about, much more aggressive about how they're presenting themselves.
What about the possibility that people just made a judgment?
Sure.
That Hillary Clinton wasn't the right person at the right time or wasn't the right person, period. Mm-hmm. You even talk in your book about how stuff, and that's the word you
yes.
use, how stuff kind of hangs on to Hillary.
Right.
So what if that was the problem uh-huh. and it's not these bigger
yeah.
structural issues?
So I don't conclude that she lost because she was a woman. I think that we lost by so few votes, any one factor could have made a difference. But even if and even if she had won, I think these obstacles would still persist. There are plenty of reasons that people could disagree with her and not want and decide not to support her for president that are quite legitimate. But what I just believe at my core after having lived through this is the stuff that hangs around her, sort of this bag, people refer to, oh, she has so much baggage. Or, you know, sometimes the press would say to me, like, suspicions about her around the emails. It's like, well, she's always so sketchy. She's always hiding something. She's doing it again. I think that this is suspicion about her that's justified and built upon years of suspicion about her. And I think at the root of it, there's not much beyond a woman who's always stepped outside of the bounds that of the roles women traditionally have played, from when she was a college student to Bill Clinton's spouse to first lady to a Senate candidate to a presidential candidate. And it doesn't mean that people have concerns about her or don't really like her or are all sexist. It's just she vexes us. She confounds us. We don't know what to make of her. There's no model for her. There's something about her I just don't like. There's something about her I just don't trust. I went and watched interviews from about her from the 92 campaign before anything. And they did Man on the Street, went on the street interviews. What do you think of Bill Clinton's wife? You know, they're not mean-spirited people either, just but, you know, there's something about her I just don't like. I don't know. There's something about her I just don't trust. And I this is when you appreciate that what a big deal it is still. I mean, we've been around this – humans have been on this planet for a very long time, and politics and the workplace have been around for a very long time. And women have only been participating in 100 years. So we're still operating in these sort of models that were created for and by men. So for women, when you sometimes feel like you have the imposter syndrome or you might feel like you don't quite fit in, there's some grain of truth to your doubt. Trust your confusion that because it wasn't necessarily built for you. And now I think that we can reimagine leadership roles. We can reimagine roles in the workplace so they suit men and women both. Everybody can bring more of them full selves to the job.
Well, one of the things that you bring up that I found really interesting was that Hillary Clinton didn't think she had an interesting story. She thought Bill Clinton had an interesting story, the man from Hope.
Yep.
Barack Obama had an interesting story. But she worried that she didn't have an interesting story. And in an age of television, much less the internet, social media, stories are the way campaigns are run.
Yes.
So that was a really fundamental revelation to me about maybe her lack of confidence in herself in this situation.
So I think she was very confident in her ability. She was very confident that she could be a good president, and that is why she ran. But I don't think she – and when she first told me, I don't have a story, I just looked at her like she was crazy. What are you talking about? You're Hillary Clinton. But I got what she meant, because I think a campaign is all about telling a story. That is what it is. Tell me a story. Tell me a story about you, the candidate, and how you fit into America. Tell me a story about my country I want to hear. And we want our president's lives to reflect classic elements of the American dream. You can see how Bill Clinton fits into that. You can see how Barack Obama fits into that. You can see how Ronald Reagan fits into that. It's just not there for women. I mean, I think there's just a hand. If you look at our history, there's a handful of women whose story has risen to, the level that they're remembered 100 years later, 200 years later. It's not as if women haven't been here all along. It's not remembered in that way. And so there wasn't anything for us to compare her to, for us to connect with, for us to feel related to her. To feel that she was part of a series of American tradition. And it's, I didn't appreciate it when I started the campaign, but it's a very big deal. And I hope that her story will give the next, the women, I think there'll be more than one, who run in 2020, there's some model, there's some way for us to think about this. Mostly, I hope, when people say, if Nikki Haley happens to challenge President Trump or Kirsten Gillibrand runs on the Democratic side and you hear, I don't know, there's something about her I just don't like, we'll pause and think, whoa, what did I just say? What's at the root of that?
So who do you see out there right now who might be the woman that you wrote this for?
So I think it's very possible a Democrat woman could win the nomination in 2020 and could beat President Trump. Hillary got nearly 3 million more votes than President Trump. So it proves, a woman can win. I think it's not as if I feel that that's some impossibility. And I think on the Democratic side, there's a number of women who may run. I mentioned Senator Gillibrand. I think Senator Elizabeth Warren, Senator Kamala Harris, Senator Amy Klobuchar, Senator Claire McCaskill. I think any one of more than one of those women will run and can win. But,
what about on the Republican side?
Nikki Haley. I'm sorry?
Yeah. You think a challenge is in the cards?
It's – wow. I mean, it's such a – so everything's so fresh and unpredictable these days. That could happen. And she's certainly very talented. So – I could see, that is a possibility. But it's just even beyond politics the way women reacted in response to Trump's election, the women's marches, the record number of women that are running for office, the Me Too movement. I think that it has felt to me like a watershed moment where we sort of collectively realized, we've been doing okay following the path that had been established before, which by definition and not anyone's fault is a path that was made by men. And now we want to venture out and maybe do things a little differently. And I think it was obviously extraordinarily disappointing to me that we lost the presidential election, extraordinarily disappointing to me, epically, historically disappointing. But I'm inspired now to think, maybe the world could be better than I had ever imagined. Maybe these old models kind of hold men and women both back. And if we're all able to, we all matter equally and we're all engaging in the world equally, that's probably going to make for a better country. I don't think anybody looks at America today and thinks, wow, we have all the answers. No one thinks that. So if more people are participating, bringing their full selves to the game, it's going to be a better country.
This may not be just about the next election or the next two elections, but you make the point. You say the rebirth will come from the ground up, or it won't come at all.
Yeah.
And the other side of that is it won't come from the leadership in Washington.
Yeah, I think that's right. I really do. I think that I believe that Donald –
and by the way, we have less than a minute here. So.
Donald Trump is disruption come to politics to prove it's broken is my view. I think that, just like the way Uber showed that the taxi model doesn't work anymore. And I think that the country has gone through enormous change and we have to have a revitalization of our democratic institutions. And it's an open – right now I'm – I'm optimistic by the way people are engaging in politics, but it's an open question if we revitalize democracy or if our best days are behind us. And, you know, it's very troubling, but I'm fundamentally optimistic that we will succeed in that.
The people you mentioned before were all Washington people.
I know.
Are there people in the states and on local level that you find particularly interesting?
I'm not exclusively looking at women. I think there are men that are good too. I think Governor Steve Bullock from Montana is a very promising leader, someone who's naturally inclined to bring people together. Democrat who's won in red states, won in a state that President Trump won by 20 points. Mitch Landrieu, the former mayor of New Orleans, another very promising leader. So I think we're going to want both my party, the Democrats, and also the country, we're going to want a candidate that can bring the country together. That's what I'm interested in.
Okay. I want to thank Jennifer Palmieri. If you'd like to meet her and hear her speak tonight at the Mercantile Library, it's at 4th and Walnut. Her speech begins at 6:30. Doors open at 6. Books will be for sale, and Jennifer will be signing. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Archives of our programs are available on the website at wvxu.org. I'm Dan Hurley. Stay tuned to 91.7 for Here and Now, coming up next on NPR.